LegalizeFreedom.com. Why are we here? Where do we come from? Where are we going? From the nature of reality to the future of humanity. Listen without limits. Unchain your brain. Change your thinking. Change your life. LegalizeFreedom.com.
Greetings and welcome once again to LegalizeFreedom.com. I'm your host, Greg Moffat, and my guest today is Colin E. Davis, who joins us to discuss his book, Transforming Darkness, A Shadow Work Toolkit for the Red-Pilled Initiate. The red-pilled individual is well aware of the parasitic side of civilization known as the Matrix or the Deep State. But what few yet understand is that the darkness we see growing out there is the direct result of the unattended darkness that dwells within each and all of us in here. This is a domain Carl Jung called the shadow, and it is a major key to healing ourselves and our world if we are brave enough to confront and work with it. The author believes that even if a minority of humans awaken to this reality, great evolutionary progress will result. The book maps out the human shadow with multiple models and describes a plethora of shadow work practices and techniques for navigating the turbulent times ahead. Hello and welcome, Colin, and thank you so much for joining us once again today on LegalizeFreedom.com.
Hi, Greg. It's great to be back, and it's a pleasure.
Excellent. Colin, you just recently published a new book that's entitled Transforming Darkness, A Shadow Work Toolkit for the Red-Pilled Initiate. Before we dive into that, just tell listeners a little bit about your background and work in general, because it's interesting. You got your feet in two camps, really, in many ways, as a professional sound engineer and musician, but also then in the research, the human condition and psychology and the non-material realms that you and I have discussed before.
Yeah, well, as you said, I started out as a musician and a heavy metal musician. And then interestingly, I started to go into the more extreme forms of metal, like death metal. And then from there, I became an audio engineer and I have a CD mastering studio. And then this study of human darkness, of the shadow and evil and psychopathology and all of this that I'm dealing with now, I think this has been something that's been developing on the side and I guess you could almost bridge them together in that whatever it was that had me interested in the dark side of consciousness, the dark side of the human condition, was present in that extreme metal music, a lot of which deals with elements of the human shadow, elements of human darkness, but does it in an artistic way. And then I kind of just naturally started to bridge that over. And I would say that I consider myself, I think a lot of your listeners would understand this idea of being red-pilled. And this is the individual who awakens to the fact that behind the surface of culture and civilization is all kinds of parasitic features, we might say, or evil, we might say, which is integrated into society. And this red pilling is some kind of it's really an initiation, really, but it's some kind of you come in contact with some kind of information that allows you to see what you couldn't see before. It was held in cognitive dissonance. And it's like in the movie They Live, you put on the glasses and then you can see something that was hidden. And that happened to me, I'd say in about 2004 or 5 with September 11th research. And I had to go through that whole process of trying to figure out, hey, how can we have this situation where the the mainstream or status quo version of events doesn't seem to match with what I'm finding here. And then you have to redevelop your whole worldview and try to figure out how this could possibly be the case. And so that kind of dropped me down the rabbit hole, so to speak. And then I just kind of kept on researching, and I got into some other fields and all of that, but everything kind of was continuing on this trajectory of trying to understand the shadow side of human consciousness and how this could possibly work. And then I'd say I had my own personal dark night of the soul when I was 35, so that would have been about 19 years ago now. And that's where I actually picked up a book that my friend had given me, a Jungian book by Robert Johnson called Owning Your Own Shadow. And that's where I started to focus on the psychological side of things. And it took some time, but I eventually figured out that what was going on here was that what I was dealing with in extreme metal music and what I was seeing through the red-pilled research was the external projection of what was to be found in the shadow of the human psyche. And so that has been building, and I've been developing that. And so now I've, with this latest book and what I did with my last book with Melissa Mari, Shadow Tech, was to put this together and sort of into a kind of a meta theory to help us see how what we call evil in the world, whether it's behavioral or cultural, what we generally refer to as evil and corrupt and discordant in the world, is a projection of our own shadows, which I can explain more deeply, but a projection of our own psychology into the world. And so that understanding, that's what kind of dominates my interest right now, and what I continue to keep building on. And I pull in other people's theories on top of my own. Of course, Carl Jung's understanding of the shadow is sort of the centerpiece of this. And that's what my present day work is about.
Well, there's the hermetic dictum, as above, so below, when thinking about fundamental reality. And comment on what you've just said is kind of as within, so without.
Yes.
You know, as you say, what we're seeing is a projection of our consciousness collectively into the 3D five sense world. Looking back, you mentioned 9/11, and that was a turning point in so many ways for so many people. But when I look back at books that I had from the 1980s onward, 1980s was when I was a teenager, and really started to get interested in the subjects that I've maintained an interest in throughout my life up to this point, and will probably till the day I die. So there were these kind of patterns beginning to be put in train back then. And I'm surprised sometimes, even when I look back at some of the books that I bought that I never got around to reading, but now they seem perfect. It's like, oh, I know why I have this book, because now I've really grasped it. At the time I bought it because it looked interesting or it had a cool cover, but it's been sitting on a shelf for 30 years or more. But despite all that interest, I have to say that 9/11 was like having a switch flicked in my mind. And it wasn't that I was bumbling along like a zombie prior to that. I was aware of a lot of not only, geopolitical machinations, but also, the non-material world and how these things interact and overlap, and, how this one continuum, there is no cutting off point between material and non-material. It's a spectrum, as it were. So despite that, evolving awareness, the 9/11 thing, I say, was like flipping a switch. It was like a cosmic trigger, and something just changed overnight in a very positive way, despite the negativity of the events. And
yes. Oh, yeah.
I think that the same can be said then with the pandemic period that we went through quite recently. For me, that was another one of these trigger points, and I think that probably got a lot of other people thinking differently about reality. Yes. whether they were older people like you and I who did live through 9/11, or the many younger people who didn't, you know, they don't even remember. Maybe they were not even born on 9/11.
Yeah.
But the pandemic,
exactly.
The pandemic played its role in all of that.
Right.
So I think that more than ever now, we're living in a time when work like yours is so particularly relevant, because although it's never just been like, you know, elaborate theories or sort of baroque ideas about how the mind and consciousness work, it's never been the case, but it's so relevant now, isn't it, really? Because we're living through times when you can read your book, for example, and over and over again on every page, you see real-world applications, you know, and
yeah.
ways to interpret events, not theoretical or hypothetical events, but, you know, events,
right.
personal and public, you know, and global events, all of that.
Yeah, it's right, because when you see, let's start with Carl Jung's understanding, because really it all kind of stems from his realizations. And but when you recognize sort of the fundamentals of how the shadow works and what it is, and how we project and displace it into the world, and how that we collectivize as groups, and we adopt ideologies or rationales as cover stories so that we can continue to project and to displace, then you can just look at that, the whole theater of conflict that's all around us, and you can see how this dynamic is working all over the place. And maybe actually I should just kind of go into just quickly, just maybe define what the shadow is in Jung's understanding, and how this possibly could work, how my psychology, my personal inner domain, my own mind, could have anything to do with Israel-Palestine or whatever conflict out there in the world. The idea of the shadow, basically, it's a development of Freud's ideas. But it's much more developed. In Freud's time, it was equivalent to the unconscious. But what Jung discovered was that the ego consciousness, the part of our minds that we call the ego, our general waking state of reality, which is ego consciousness or conscious awareness, this domain of the mind, this is the primary domain that we're aware of, it has to, by nature, it has to reject aspects of our psychological condition that are out of phase with what is acceptable in the world. We have a very ancient primal instincts for violence and sexuality and power and all of these kinds of things, and they're socially incompatible. They're incompatible with the way we would want others to see us. They're incompatible with the way we would like to see ourselves. And so our conscious ego naturally rejects these darker elements of our nature and represses them into our unconscious. And then from there, they have to go somewhere. And so then what we do as a psychological mechanism is that we then dump this material back out into the world under guises, under covers. And the way that works is that we see in other people elements of ourselves that we can't accept about ourselves. So if we ourselves are narcissistic, or we ourselves are have a lot of unconscious rage, or we ourselves are striving for power and status in our group or whatever, we will be triggered by other people who display those elements in their personality. And then we will then come up with rationales how that person is the bad person, that person is the greedy person, that person is the evil person. And especially if we can get our friends or peer group to agree with us, then we will use that individual or that other group outside of us as a target. And then what we can do is we will then see that other person or that other group as evil or demonic or corrupt or whatever it is. And then we will take action in the world to move our own repressed energy into the world. So we'll become activists, or we'll furiously type on the keyboard, and we'll get into arguments, or whatever it is that we do, we'll end up displacing and moving this shadow energy out of ourselves through this mechanism, and we won't see what we're doing. We'll say, you know, we'll pick sides in conflicts around the world. We'll pick Israel or Palestine, or we'll pick Russia or the United States or whatever group, and then we'll use that as a target to dump all of our own internal shadow material out into the world. And then that's basically, it's a very kind of primitive and very destructive way that human beings maintain the order of society and the order of their own psychology. And it's a very, very deep and philosophical, it's a very disturbing problem, really, when you realize that we don't have any other way to have organized societies and to have, let's say, peace and order. Because I'm sitting in this nice neighborhood right here in Central Texas, and you know, it's clean and organized, and everybody's getting along more or less, and people are stopping at the stop sign, and there's order here. But all of these people here have a primal dark side. They have a shadow. And if those elements of their psychology, let's say in Freud's terms, their superego, were to break down, we would just revert back to a very primitive state, and we would completely ruin our social order. And so the fact that we have these two sides to us, we have our ordered side, and then we have our primal, chaotic, destructive side, and we don't know what to do with it. We have to have some kind of mechanism for dealing with it. And nature has worked out a mechanism, and it's very ugly, and it's very destructive. And basically, it's like in the principle in physics of the displacement of entropy, where every system, whatever kind of system, whether it's organic or otherwise, has to dump out its internal chaos, its internal garbage. It has to dump it out of its own boundaries. And so human beings have figured out how to dump our own internal garbage out into the world. And we dump it onto other people. We dump it onto the natural environment. We dump it out. And then we play all kinds of games, cognitive dissonant games, and rationales to help us to not see what we're doing. So that's kind of the basic overview of what the shadow is and how we project and displace it into the world, thereby creating conflict and discord and so-called evil. And we do it together collectively and as a collective circuit, and we don't know what we're doing. It's very challenging to become aware of how we're doing this and take responsibility for it in our own lives. And then because then we have to work out more creative ways and healthier ways of dealing with our own primal nature. And so that's kind of the fundamental problem of the shadow and its incompatibility with our normal state of consciousness.
Well, the pollution metaphor is very good because, of course, it, on one level, it's not metaphor at all, but the dumping of things into the environment, as it were. And if you want to bring the metaphor and the reality together, even when this all partially explains, or maybe completely explains ultimately, why, for example, human beings are destroying their natural environment, the ecosystems on which we depend, because there's big, sort of simple profit-based motives and others for the actual events, the action of dumping things in the environment. But then there's our rationalization of it and our denial of it. For example, either that's not happening, or it's happening because this thing that's happening is necessary or desired or whatever, or it's happening somewhere else. All of that cobalt mining or whatever is happening in South Africa, or it's happening in China or whatever. You know what I mean? It's not
right.
It's not a problem here for us. And your analogy for your nice environment, your local community there that you're living in, I'm living somewhere probably different but very similar in many ways. Not only is that only a hair's breadth away from anarchy and violence, but it's at the same time at a remove from a lot of the physical manifestations of our collective inner darkness.
Yeah, exactly. What would happen if we, with the cobalt mining for the electric car batteries or whatever it is, what if we had to be very careful and carefully consider every step to how we would create some new technology or some new market? And we would look at this phenomenon of electric cars or whatever, and then we would say, okay, well, we're going to need these elements, or we're going to need this. And then every single thing that we did to get this particular element and this particular element, this particular manufacturing technique, everything would have to be totally responsible, would have to be totally clean and symbiotic with the local environment and all of that. It would take a very long time for us to develop things, and it would really slow down our technological progress. And so it's very exciting and energetic to get involved in all this technological progress, and human beings have a lot of energy and it needs to go somewhere. And so we want to build markets. We want to build cars. We want to build all kinds of stuff, which is one of the ways actually that we displace, or we could say sublimate, our not just our positive energies, but our negative shadow energies, is through work. And but if we had to take responsibility for all of these things, we wouldn't really, it would really slow down human civilization. And we would have to be a lot more adult and a lot more measured than we are. And we would have to have a different value system than we have. And I think that our civilization, one of the biggest values of our civilization is growth. And it's just an unconscious value of our people in our time. It's grow. It's make more people, make more stuff, spread out, explore, go to the moon, build. And so when you start to become really aware of how that your growth is also, it has a toxic footprint in so many different ways, then it would just pretty much put a stop to a lot of what we're doing. And then what would we do with our energy? Then what would we maintain a lot of our sanity through the idea that we're making progress, and that we feel that things are looking up, and we're progressing as individuals and as people. And we just can't be honest about the dark side of everything that we do, because that would really just put an end to everything. And so we just ignore it, and we just make covers for it and rationales for it, and say, oh, well, we'll deal with it later, or some generation down the road will deal with all the uranium that we are burying, and all of this. Somebody else will deal with it. And so it's very immature once you really get an understanding of it and see it. You realize how immature it is. And then, you know, maybe you'll take responsibility for your own environmental footprint. Let's say you could get really, really responsible for your own environmental footprint, but you probably wouldn't be living in the kind of house that you're living in and using the technology that you're using. And you probably couldn't convince your friends and family to do it. So we're kind of just on this ride and everyone's denying everything. And it's kind of just where we are. And if you start speaking up about it, then you're going to cause a ruckus. So most people just decide to go with the flow and whatever happens, happens.
Well, although the global human population is still rising, that has slowed tremendously. And not only is it projected to begin to contract at some point in the not too distant future, we're already seeing sharp population contraction in certain regions of the world. Western Europe, for example, is a classic example. And I dare say the US as well, declining birth yep. rates. And this is one of, there's many agendas at play when it comes to mass immigration and also illegal immigration. Those two things not being, you know, there's an overlap there. Part of the explanation is needing to keep the numbers up, because the industrial society is ultimately a numbers game in terms of resources. And there's human resources. You know, we need not so much people to manufacture things anymore, but boy, do we need consumers, you know?
Yes.
And elite groups at the top of the pyramid, so to speak, they do need that broad base to keep the whole structure up. And that's one of the challenges that we'll be facing going forward in material terms is, you know, contracting population. But all of this is pointing us, we're being steered in a certain direction, I think, in terms of our development. That you say we have all this energy and we're addicted to growth, but there's material growth and there's inner growth as well. And I think we're by hook or by crook, whether we like it or not, we've been steered towards a time where we look within for growth and development. But as you point out, your work's pointing out, for a lot of people, we're nowhere near close to even being able to acknowledge problems with the physical systems, you know, the economic and energy systems that we're all dependent on. So if you can't even acknowledge the difficulty there or challenges in the future, what chance have you got of like looking within yourself, seeing these systems a manifestation of collective consciousness and unconsciousness, and then saying, well, again, as within, so without, you know, that's if we want to see something different when we look out the window or look on the television, that has to come from within us. And ultimately, I think if to get metaphysical for a while, I think that for all that we work together and we are collective in many ways, I think in terms of this journey, in metaphysical terms, in spiritual terms, if you will, I think we do this alone. I think ultimately we are alone. And that's kind of part of the point. If you think of it in terms of a cult philosophy, you know, we're here as individuals temporarily for a while to go through this, you know, what's a trial by fire or whatever. It's a test, you know, in many ways, I think.
Yes. Yeah. What if the work that I do internally, what if my own inner work and personal work, if it's directed towards evolution with total seriousness and with a spiritual conviction behind it, what if what's happening is I am a little mini laboratory for the universe, and what if what I figure out in my laboratory gets transmitted into the field, into the collective, and that by me doing this work at the microcosmic level, I'm actually working out problems for the universe, and that it will be mirrored macrocosmically if I'm successful in my own personal laboratory. Do you see what I'm saying?
Oh, exactly. I mean, that's a crystallization of what I think I was driving at with my previous statements, is that, you know, we're being pushed in that direction. And yes, that what you say, what if? Well, I'd say, well, that's how it works. Or that's how it seems to be, you know, because there's a lot in all of this. There is a lot of exploration. You draw upon the work of many other thinkers from, you know, down the decades and even the centuries now, you know, bringing these ideas together. But it does seem to be the case when you apply yourself to this that that's people like Jung, you know, we're clearly onto something, and that we have we have got something at the minute. This framework, a speculative framework about reality, inner and outer, and it does seem to be we're following it. And so far, it seems to be we're getting positive feedback, aren't we? It's like, yes, you're on the right track. Or you're on something like the right track. Keep going. That's certainly what I feel. You're being told, you keep moving in this direction.
Yes.
You know, all you've got for now is this lifetime, and you're just one person. But despite me saying, you know, we do this alone, the individual, of course, can make a difference. That's one of the great cliches, isn't it? But it is true, because at the end of the day, it's also, in this way, it's a numbers game too. You know, we saw that with the, particularly when we went through the pandemic period in very practical levels. There was a time when we were being presented in outward physical terms with a very restrictive, for want of a better word, totalitarian vision of how things were going to be going forward. You know, tremendous losses of freedoms taken for granted, not everywhere in the world, but in many parts of the world, certainly the parts that you and I live in, swept away, swept under the rug, shall we say, overnight. And it was a numbers game that allowed us, enough of us, to say we're not having this, to push back.
Right.
You know, and that, again, that's an outer world thing. But there was, as I've documented, as we've discussed previously on the show, and as I've documented extensively in my work, there was, and this is what a lot of people missed, there was, of course, a non-material dimension, as there is with all events, too, particularly what we went through with the pandemic. There was a real darkness driving that, no question about it. I even speculated, is this some kind of non-human consciousness? There's something going on here that was profoundly anti-human, you know? And I think you were missing, if you're just looking at the events on the ground, so to speak, you're missing the main event, which isn't visible to the naked eye.
Yeah, if you would take seriously the idea that what happens in the external world is a movie-like projection or dream-like projection. I know you've had Paul Levy on here, and he calls it, you know, he refers to our collective reality as a collective dream, and that we can awaken and be lucid in that dream. And I often use a similar analogy that it's a movie, and that we're all collectively projecting this movie, and that we're all interconnected. There's a great definition of the mind that comes from Dan Siegel, which is the mind is an embodied and relational field of energy and information. And when you recognize that the mind or psyche is an embodied and relational field of energy and information, and that the collective state that we create, that we call culture and society, is a manifestation of our own inner nature, then when these events happen, you get to learn about some aspect of the human psyche. You get to learn about some aspect of, let's say it's a particular civilization that is engaged in some kind of a revolution or hysteria, such as World War II or the COVID thing or whatever, and you watch this thing unfold unconsciously, and all these people unconsciously participating in it, you're getting to see a very deep and symbolic movie, like these movies created by masters of symbolism, like Stanley Kubrick, for example, and how that every scene is perfectly set up to deliver deeper symbolic truths. And when you realize that reality, external reality or society and culture is such a symbolic collective projection, you can now, you don't have to join the, you don't have to jump into the movie and become an actor in the movie. You can stay removed from it and become a director of the movie and an analyst of the movie. And by doing that, you will learn about human nature, about the human psyche. And when it has to do with the dark stuff, you will learn about the dark side of this human psyche. And when you see all these people collectivizing to censor other people, to control other people, to poison other people, these are all features of the human shadow that exist in all of us.
That concludes part one of our interview. Part two will be available soon in the subscribers area at LegalizeFreedom.com.
LegalizeFreedom.com.